Good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming and coming back after the long break. My name is Diana Zapata. I'm a PhD student at Texas A&M University. And today I'm going to be talking about diurnal changes, diurnal greenhouse gas emissions and their different carbon and nitrogen input from cover crops. I will start this presentation giving an overview of my study site. This is a fallow land for about 8 years where we did a conversion to organic crop production. We started by planting a cover crop last year. During the summer, we plant cowpea, and during the winter, we have rye grass and hedgerow. Around April in 2016, we planted our main crops that were corn, sorghum, and soybean. So given that the disturbance that we had made in our system, we are expecting drastic changes in carbon and nitrogen inputs, and that will be more in the long-term time, but we want to start seeing what is happening and trying to understand what is the effect. So given that disturbance, we are going to have changes mainly in land management coming from tillage and not tillage in use of the system. And we are going to have also changes in nutrient cycling coming from green manure in the form of poultry in our case, and also from cover crop treatments. So those inputs are going to induce some changes in those greenhouse gas emissions, and we are looking at changes in the carbon and nitrogen pool in the soil, and also changes in soil fluxes coming from CO2, methane, nitrous oxide, and that's what we are looking at. So given that, our objective is to investigate how those changes in carbon and nitrogen input from the cover crop are going to affect those greenhouse gas emissions. Our study site was located in the Brazos River Farm at College Station, Texas. The soil type, it was a chips clay soil, and this is relevant from the results that I will be presenting. And this is a shrink and swelling clay that is it changes with moisture, and that will be relevant as we go through the presentation. We have a split plot design with a main crop as the main plot, and then we have different cover crop treatments as the subplot. So we have a current practice that will be the no cover crop, only tilling, and that the tillage will be done as needed, so just to control weeds in the plot. We also have a double core crop treatment that was under conventional and no-till system. Additionally, we have a summer cover crop in the no-till system. As I mentioned earlier, the summer cover crop was a cowpea, and during the winter, we plant hedgerow and ryegrass. For greenhouse gas measurement, we use a state-of-the-art system. This is a two systems that we couple a Lycor 8100. This is an automated soil gas flood system that uses an infrared gas analyzer to measure CO2. The analyzer is coupled with a multiplexer that controls 8 chambers, and we collect CO2 concentration every 30 minutes. Another analyzer that we coupled just to increase the capabilities was the Picardo analyzer. It's a laser base, and it has a wider spectrum of gases that it's measuring. It measures additional to CO2, it measures methane, nitrous oxide, and ammonium. However, in our study, because we just did the transition, we are not really expecting having high fluxes, and that's exactly what we observed. We didn't have fluxes from ammonia, nitrous oxide, and we find something interesting about CO2 and methane. Also, given that the two analyzers measure the same gas, we were able to cross the results and make sure that we were measuring the right concentration. And we use a SolPlus Pro to process the data. The fluxes were calculated at the same time frame, every 30 minutes. We measure in row, which means that the chamber was located close to the row and between the rows of the treatment. Because we have several crops and we have several treatments, what we did is that for every week we will measure one crop and the 4 treatments, 2 chambers per plot, and the following week we will move to the next treatment just to have a kind of growing season trend for all the crops. This is an idea of how the system works. So in number 1 we will have the soil chamber. The chamber open and close every 3 minutes, and the air will move through the multiplexer, where the manifold bulb will direct the air through the IRGA, and from the IRGA there is a loop cycle that will move the air into the Picard analyzer, and then the air will go out from the chamber. Some of the additional variables that we measure were precipitation, wind speed, solar radiation, and also we look at the soil environment by measuring temperature and moisture at 3 different depths. We calculate the Q10, or that temperature sensitivity, for every increase in 10 degrees Celsius, so that will be the factor that will tell us how responsive is that CO2 respiration to increase in temperature. So go back to the results. I guess I will have a good problem. The volume of data that we're seeing is high, but that's a good problem to have. And I will start discussing the effect of tillage on soil CO2 emission by looking at the conventional till. So in the y-axis, we have the soil CO2 flux, and symbol coded is the different crops that we measure along the season, and color coded will be the treatment. So for the conventional treatment, during the early and middle season, we didn't see changes in the cover crop as a treatment. But what happened through the end of the season, if you see the magnitude, for those that are familiar with this, magnitude for soil CO2 fluxes, what you observe is that a normal flux will change, will range between 0 to 10, and during a rain event, it will go up to 15 maybe. But in the late season, what we start observing were extremely high values that went from 0 to almost 40 micromoles per meter squared per second. And that was really excited. At the beginning, we were thinking something might be wrong with the analyzer. We're really having problems. And we tried 3 different things. First, we are measuring CO2 with 2 different analyzers, so we are able to rule out any other errors coming from the system itself. So if one analyzer is telling me that the concentration at any specific point is 1,000 parts per million, I will be surprised. We are about 400 in atmospheric CO2. We check the second analyzer, exactly the same. The difference between them are about 30 parts per million, which is nothing. And we did a third test that was checking with an external analyzer, just a third-party analyzer, to make sure that the concentration were right. So what we observe is in the late season, we have a high soil cracking. Soil start to crack. This is a vertisol type of soil. And we relate that it wasn't visible when we placed the chamber, but if we look around, we were observing those cracks happening. And as the soil starts drying even more, it starts to shrink more as well. So in the conventional, we observed that when cracking was happening, the current practice was emitting more to the end of the season. However, when we look at the no-till, the fluxes were extremely high, almost double that the no-till system. We observed the values close to 75 micromoles per meter squared. So in the early and middle season, we didn't see like clear difference between the summer and the double cover crop, but through the end of the season, the double cover crop was emitting more. But that effect is being hidden by that cracking that we are observing. So we cannot really make a conclusion at this point, because we are having another factor coming to play a role in soil CO2 respiration. Interesting event happening here is that, as you guys see, we have a high increase in CO2 after the soil starts to dry, and it drops, but immediately it goes up again. And that is related with the rewetting that is happening in the soil. When we have cracks, they will start forming as the soil dries. It may try to close after a rain event, but the soil has a type of memory. It knows where to crack, right? So it will go back and start breathing again. So that pattern that is showing there is basically how the cracks are breathing as they change with volume. And this is just a picture just to give you an idea of the cracks that we were seeing in the field. So when we look at the Q10 or the value, what we observe is that before soil cracking, there was a Q10 was around 3.1. So for every 10 degrees, we have an increase in 3 micromoles per second. And what we observe is that the R squared was not great, but it gives an idea how it depends on temperature. After cracking, what we observe is that Q10 value suddenly decreased, And what you will see in green right here are the points that we add to the figure after the cracking starts happening in the soil. And that just indicates that it's that decoupling of that Q10 value. I believe that after seeing this, I will not think that only temperature is playing a role there. There is something else there that we have to consider. So this is something that just to keep in mind in considering our soil texture. Looking more at the diurnal soil CO2 pattern, this is a perfect shape that we will observe where temperature is driving that soil CO2 response. And normally the static chamber will be measuring down here, and it's just for limitation. We can get an idea how much we are emitting, but we have quite a variation going on down there. We measure in the drought treatments, and we didn't see like great difference, but when we look at the within treatments, what we observe is that the no-cover crop treatment is emitting more CO2, and that we attribute that just to the cover crop. We will have a less cover crop in the current practice as we are tilling the soil more, we are removing that biomass that was accumulating there. This is quite interesting to us. So we have cracking, we have high soil fluxes. What can we expect regarding those diurnal patterns? So since we measure any additional environmental variables, what we did is we correlate them and make, okay, we have these high floods coming up here. This is still high for the season. It was really dry period. It wasn't after a rain event, so this value is still high. And when we plotted to solar radiation, where we observed that when the solar radiation in red drops from almost 600 to about 200 watts per meter squared, we see that flat decline in soil CO2. It's that drastically it drops. So if we think about all the factors that are not only soil temperature might be playing a role, we might be looking also what is happening in regarding to the environment that we are measuring. Also, if we only were to measure from 9 to 10 as we do with the static chamber, we might see a small flat down here. So it just, this result just showed that we cannot still keep doing the measurements that we do just because now we know that there is high variability in those measurements. It may provide an idea, but we cannot trust like the result at all. And this is a concern if we think about carbon balance. We are integrating, we are doing like a total CO2 emission for a season, but we are not considering that it is variation. Every day is inducing like a different amount of CO2, and that's what we observe. Another interesting pattern that we observe is that when we have those high fluxes around 20 micromoles, we observe the same. In a cloudy day, when suddenly the solar radiation drops, we see that drastic like decline and to normal values. And this is a single day to an average of 8 chambers, measuring exactly the same. We have another day that we observe the opposite trend. We have a flat line, normal values within the range, and suddenly it goes up. So for these values, we are still looking at the data carefully. That's why I'm saying it's a good problem to have because I have a story to tell about it. And with that, I will move to the conclusions that there is a uncertainty to how we are going to measure soil CO2 in those ching and swelling soils. And there is papers that have already mentioned it, not really measured it itself, but that CO2 release might be coming in instead of diffusion by advection, so there is a different mechanism that we need to start considering. And as a conclusion, so we have that the soil CO2 flux, we did observe difference between cover crop treatments, but at this point, because we are having that event like the soil cracking, it's really difficult to conclude which is emitting more or less unless we conclude that. We know how to treat those cracking in the soil, how to account for that. We also observed that the soil cracking dramatically increased in the no-till treatment. So if we no-till the soil in the type of texture that we have, we are just giving the advantage to the soil to increase that CO2 emission. So that's something to consider, conventional till to decrease that. And the temperature sensitivity is just factor that is not explaining the variability that we are having, so we need to further investigate what is happening in vertical.
One very quick question, if there are any.
Why do we cover
So Likert has the multiplexer that controls eight chambers, but only measures CO2. In our system, it's an organic system. We are interested to know how much methane, nitrous oxide, and ammonia we are emitting. So we are using the hardware for Likert and the to extend the capability to measure more gases in the system.
No, the
G25, no, that's enough.
Good. Thank you, Diana.